Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I'm Valerie Jarrett. On behalf of President Obama, I am delighted to welcome you to the White House, those of you who are with us today, as well as those who are listening around the country and will be participating online. We are so excited to have you all with us. We are particularly excited to be a part of the Open for Questions event. And we have with us some of your favorite websites, including The Griot, News One, Black Planet, Hello Beautiful, and The Urban Daily. Last week, as I think everyone knows, the President addressed a joint address of Congress where he called for the passage of the American Jobs Act. Earlier today in the Rose Garden, the President announced that today he would be sending the actual bill to Congress and calling on them to pass it and pass it now. The reason why he feels this sense of urgency is all across our country, people are suffering. They want jobs and they want them now. They want to go to work. They want to go back to work. They want to be trained and ready for work. And they don't have the luxury of waiting until the next election, 14 months away. They need action and they need it now. If Congress passes this bill, it will put people back to work and it will create jobs now and it will put more money in the pockets of working Americans across our country. As you know, the unemployment rate in the African American community is unacceptably high, over 16%. And the President knows that inaction is not an option. That's why he made sure that this jobs plan will directly have a positive impact on the African American community. And I'm sure that one of the topics that we'll be discussing in the next hour will be the American Jobs Act. As you know, Interactive One has invited you to pose questions to the White House officials that I'll introduce to you in a moment on issues that you care most about. So let me quickly introduce to you our panelists, most of whom will need no introduction, and then I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Johnson from The Griot, who's going to jump right in, introduce the rest of the panel, and get to the questions. So starting near and dear to my heart, Ambassador Ron Kirk, who has promised he's going to behave this afternoon. Please welcome our U.S. Trade Representative, Ron Kirk. We also have Maria Johns, who's the Deputy Administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration, who's done terrific work with small businesses all across our country. Welcome, Maria. Melody Barnes, who's the Director of the White House Council on Domestic Policy, with whom I have the pleasure of working each and every day. Melody, welcome. Jason Furman, who's the Principal Deputy Director for the National Economic Council and had as much to do with as anyone on our economic team putting together this very important American Jobs Act. Jason, welcome to you. And shortly, I'd like to announce we'll be also joined by the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Sean Donovan, and he will just slip right in and hit the ground running when he arrives. And so without any further ado, Jeff, may I turn it over to you?
You absolutely may.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And I'll be back at the end to wrap things up.
Very, very quickly, it's an honor and privilege to be here. The journalists that are also here with me are Smokey Fontaine from News One, Carlo Oval, and Jerry Barrow. And I'm going to allow them to introduce their agencies more directly as they ask their first question. I want to get right into this as we talked about the fact that I'm sure the jobs bill would be brought up. One of our Griot readers asked very simply, what can I do to help this bill pass? Please, anyone.
Okay, well, great. Well, first of all, thank you all for having us here today. And I think the President said it extremely well when he spoke to Congress last week. He said that he would be going around the country. He was in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia just last week. We'll be in Ohio tomorrow talking to Americans and encouraging them to speak up, to become engaged, to listen to the elements that are part of this jobs bill, recognizing that they will affect their friends, their neighbors, their sons, their daughters, and encourage action because we have to have Congress pass this bill immediately. The President has sent the American Jobs Act to Congress. He has spoken with leaders, both in the House and the Senate, and what we need is immediate movement so that we will be in a position to save or create millions of jobs that are desperately needed, particularly in the African American community, because as Valerie said, we have over 16% unemployment there.
Jeff, can I just ask, let me put on my, okay, forget this ambassador part. I used to be a mayor of Dallas. One, first of all, let me thank you all because it was because of many of you all's agitation, frankly, in highlighting the ridiculously unacceptable levels of unemployment in our community that I think we had the win to move forward with this president's bill. But one, as you reach out to our elected officials, I would just encourage you to not put any constraints on yourselves. I think you can assume most of the members of Congress who represent our communities get this and embrace it. I would encourage you to just make sure your advocacy goes to every member of Congress, irrespective of what party they're in or who they represent, and demand that they do the common sense things that the president has given Congress a chance to do to help put America back to work.
I would just jump in and say, on a particular level, we have to make sure that the initiatives that the president laid out are seen as not only being able to help communities that have been hardest hit, take African-American communities in the way they've been devastated by the foreclosure crisis, but to show the broad benefits of acting to make sure that we're making a difference in those communities. The president proposed a project Rebuild that would target $15 billion to communities that have been hardest hit by foreclosures. It would put 200,000 people back to work, particularly construction workers based in those local communities. But we have to recognize this isn't just about the homes that have been foreclosed on. It isn't just about African-American neighborhoods. This is about the national housing market, and everybody has a stake here. If you live next door to a home that's been foreclosed on, your home, even if you made every payment on your mortgage, goes down $10,000 in value that very day. Everybody has a stake in these efforts, and we have to show that by putting the communities back to work that have been hardest hit, the entire housing economy and the entire broader economy is going to benefit.
And I'll just briefly add that at the SBA, we want to continue the work that started actually day one with the Obama administration in supporting small businesses and their ability to create the jobs that our country needs. The American Jobs Act is a critical piece of legislation, and I also thank you for being here and add my voice to Ambassador Kirk's that thank you for the feedback that got this American Jobs Act package built and put before Congress. But this is not the first time the president has turned his attention to small businesses. His attention on small business growth and job development was from day one. And at the SBA, as we saw the results of the Recovery Act that put $30 billion in the hands of small businesses, that spurred part of the recovery from the greatest economic downturn since the Great Depression. But the fact of the matter is the recovery has been very, very uneven. And that our community, the African American community, has suffered to a greater degree. And at the SBA, that has led us to create some very targeted initiatives to focus on bringing back the economies in the African American communities around the country. And the importance of the American Jobs Act is that it ties to that work and allows us as an agency to further those efforts.
Good afternoon. I'm Jerry Barrow from theurbandaily.com. One of our readers, Nia Lee, writes in, as a college student with a medical condition and an expected family contribution of zero, I can see a doctor but can't afford to purchase what they prescribed for me. Are there plans to help college students with an EFC of zero to free or discounted medicine?
Well, one thing that I would say, depending on the circumstances surrounding this particular young woman, just this year, in fact, just last month, we announced an additional component of the Affordable Care Act, and that's preventative care for women. We have also been focused on trying to bring down the cost of prescription drugs in many different ways for all Americans, particularly looking at the effect that is imposed upon seniors. But in the case of this young woman, I'm assuming, given the fact that she's in college, that she's younger than that, preventative care that's available, making sure that those who are in college have access to insurance and medical care there, but also through the community health centers that are available. That was a big part of what we did in the Affordable Care Act. So there are a number of different ways, in addition to the existing programs that we have, Medicaid, for example, to make sure that people have access to health care that they very, very desperately need. But I think, particularly if she's looking in the area of preventative care, what we've done for the first time is make sure that women who have never had preventative care targeted specifically towards them have the kinds of services that they need, services that are extremely costly, that if they don't have access to can lead to extended hospital stays, can lead to more expensive healthcare procedures, have access to these kinds of services. And we're making sure that that's available to college students as well. Again, not knowing her circumstances, but also making insurance available to college students and those up to age 26 who can stay on their parents' insurance is another way that we're making sure that people are getting the kind of, young Americans are getting the kind of coverage that they need.
Smokey Fontaine, News1.com. So often, so many of the traditional kind of job initiatives and programs don't well serve the African-American community. One of our readers writes in, what out-of-the-box, quote-unquote, methods for job creation is the administration taking? Are there any new ideas in the American Jobs Act?
Maybe I'll take the first shot at that, and I think that's a very good question. Now, to some degree, you do want to take things that work. You have, for example, highway construction, and there's a formula for how that money goes out, and it's easy, and you put more money into it, and more of that money goes out. But then you want to do things to make sure that people are really getting those jobs that you're creating through that. And we have some innovative ideas that we've worked on with Melody to make sure that a lot of the communities that don't often get those types of highway jobs have access to them, whether it's training money, streamlining the process for contracting, and really making sure those jobs are there. In the American Jobs Act, the president also has the largest reform in unemployment insurance in four decades, and preserves its core function, which is protecting you when you don't have a job. You paid into it, you bought insurance. If you can't find a job, you're looking for work, you should get your unemployment insurance. But also at the same time, for people who want to use it in that way, helping turn into something that can connect you with jobs, connect you with employers, whether it's training, on the job work, sharing a job with someone else if it comes down to that, and getting yourself back into the workforce more quickly if that's what you choose to do. There's also ideas in here that Melody could speak more to that include areas like summer jobs, subsidized jobs for folks on TANF, but then also a pot of money for new innovative ideas to see what ideas flourish, what comes out of it, so that we can use some of the tried and true things we've done in the past and combine them with new and innovative approaches, all at the same time bringing the best evidence to bear so that we're learning from this experience and doing even better in the future.
Yeah, I mean, to pick up on what Jason is saying, it's a combination of new ideas and also old ideas that we know worked. I mean, we know that when we passed the American Recovery Act, that we were able to bring hundreds of thousands of people back into the workforce through our subsidized job program. We have also built that into the American Jobs Act. At the same time, we've put together a $5 billion Pathways to Work Fund that includes, as Jason was saying, $1.5 billion for a youth and summer jobs program, for those 16 to 24 years of age. Also included in that is the $2 billion subsidized jobs program, and then another $1.5 billion for innovative opportunities on the job training, which we know has worked extremely well, and often people who go through those kinds of programs end up in permanent employment programs. So we've done that, and then thought a lot about the long-term unemployed, which we know that's a significant problem in the African-American community, and in the ways that Jason mentioned, using the UI system, using the unemployment insurance system as a way to not only make sure that people can cover their needs, but also that people are getting and keeping the skills that they have that make them and keep them relevant in the job market. So thinking about what's been innovative and happening around the country, and also making sure that we're building in the fair labor standards and minimum wage protections that have to be there, but also thinking about additional ways, things that we've tried and we've seen have worked in the past, and giving states additional flexibility so that we can bring and keep as many people in the job market as we possibly can.
Just briefly, I've been traveling the country at, like Jane the Baptist, talking about this is the time to start a business. And even though this is a challenging economy, it truly is a great time to start a business. As I mentioned before, the Obama administration has been focused from day one on providing tools to small business owners and would-be entrepreneurs to help them. Tricia Kearney-Willis is in the back of the room, our partner, who we've been traveling around the country on summits focused on urban entrepreneurship. We have a set of summits coming up focused on young entrepreneurs with the purpose of making sure people are aware of the tools that the SBA has and how to put those tools in your hands and get you started on the path to small business development and job creation. Just one example I'll give you. We know, I talked earlier about the uneven nature of the recovery and the fact that the black community in particular is having, in some areas, a really tough time getting access to capital. So what we did, working with the Department of Treasury, was to develop a new loan product from the SBA for the first time, where we have our government-backed guaranteed loan available through non-traditional lenders like CDFIs, like microloan intermediaries in the community. This is a significant change and enhancement in the SBA's loan programs because those types of lenders are in the community, they understand the small business community, and are very fine lending partners who also provide technical assistance and a high-touch approach to the companies that they have in their portfolio. So there are new tools, never before available, to people who are looking to start a business, and we're getting a good reaction from young people around the country and looking to see that grow. We're working with the HBCU community to make sure that on our college campuses around the country, that spirit of entrepreneurship is there, it's connected to the academic portfolio, and also helping our young people as they're studying their various disciplines, that they have a mind toward how to use that discipline and come out of college and start a new start a new business.
I want to build on this idea of taking time-tested methods that we know are reaching African-American communities and to build on them with new directions, new ideas. This Project Rebuild that I talked about is based on a neighborhood stabilization effort that has put $7 billion into communities that have seen high levels of foreclosure. We know that it has reached African-American communities. The facts are that it's twice as targeted to African-American communities as it is to the average neighborhood in the country, and that it's begun to help African-American entrepreneurs, contractors, real estate professionals get connected. But we wanted to take it a step further. In fact, Jeff and I were together at a Congressional Black Caucus jobs fair and town hall recently in Ohio, where this issue came up. How do we continue to put construction workers to work in African-American communities that have been hard hit? And so we've added a number of things. One of the things that we heard was that it's not just about residential properties. We have lots of storefronts sitting vacant in these communities. It's retail. It may be industrial buildings or warehouses. So we've expanded this effort to include up to 30% of the funding that can go to commercial or industrial properties or retail properties as well. Another thing that we heard is that, well, it's great to long-term be able to fix up these homes, put people back to work, but there's also a short-term problem here. Our communities can't afford to cut the grass today because local budgets have been hit so hard. We can't afford to keep up these properties while we're waiting for the renovation to take place. So we're allowing up to 10% of this funding in Project Rebuild to put folks to work immediately maintaining these properties while we're getting to the longer-term work of rebuilding those homes. We're also bringing in new partners, nonprofit partners like the Urban League and others, that are able to bring new skills, new relationships. We're not just giving out formula dollars. About $10 billion of the money would go in formula to local governments, but an additional $5 billion would be competitive, open to nonprofits and community-based for-profits that could bring a different perspective, different relationships, and a different ability to work on these in African-American communities. So three new ideas that have come out of town halls and other things that we've done around the country to really take this to the next level in African-American communities.
This is Carla from HelloBeautiful.com and Black Planet. And Diane Goodman, a Hello Beautiful reader, asks, what would it take to get manufacturing jobs back in the U.S.? With so many jobs being moved offshore, what has the manufacturing sector largely been written off? Is there a plan to make America attractive to manufacturers in the long term?
Happy to take the first shot, unless, Ambassador, you want to. That's a great question. And manufacturing is really the backbone of the American economy. It's critical in everything we do. And one of the encouraging things is it's been enormously hard hit over the last decade. It's come back a little bit faster than some of the other sectors of the economy, but nowhere nearly as quickly as we need. There are several things that we can do. Number one is the market's going to pick what the best areas are, but there's certain places where the government can play a really key role in identifying innovative new areas and making sure we're supporting and nurturing them. And green jobs is one of those important ones. You want to make sure that you're not just using renewable electricity, for example, but that the United States is also doing more to produce the wind turbines that are used to produce that electricity rather than importing them all. So green jobs, electric batteries has been a real success story. It's obviously going to be one of the critical technologies in the future is electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles. A couple of years ago, the United States was making barely any of the batteries. Now we're on track to making a quarter of them, and that's because of the types of investments we made in the Recovery Act. Trade, Ambassador Kirk will speak to, is critical to this. The president's goal of doubling exports over the next 5 years is very important to manufacturing. And finally, I would just cite the tax code as a whole. You want one that makes America's businesses as competitive as possible, and that's why the president is pushing forward with a reform of the corporate tax code. Right now, manufacturers actually pay higher taxes than financial companies. And that's what we want. We want manufacturers here in America on one hand, and then on the other hand, we actually go out and penalize them when it comes to our tax code. And that's something, an example of something that we could rectify through corporate tax reform.
As counterintuitive as it might seem for many Americans, having a smart, thoughtful, balanced trade policy can be a real aid to us maintaining and expanding our manufacturing base. In the interest of time, my website is ustr.gov, and all of you may not be familiar with all of the work of what we do, but I would encourage you to visit it. One thing President Obama challenged us to do when I took over this office was more honestly address what he thought was some of the legitimate concerns people had about our trade policy. So I've spent the last 18 months going from Pittsburgh to Detroit to Maine to Los Angeles, and what gave me heart was even in Detroit, people understood how critical it is that America goes out and compete for these 95% of the world's consumers who live somewhere else. We get it. They were horribly frustrated, though, that they felt like the United States had frankly dropped the ball in terms of fighting and defending the rights of America's workers and exporters. So that was an easy thing we could fix. And one of the things we've done is we have been much more aggressive and using the enforcement tools we have to protect our workers and manufacturers. One example, we had a tool that we could use against China for just flooding our market with products that China agreed to when we admitted them to the World Trade Organization. 7 different occasions, American industry had petitioned the U.S. government for help. The case was heard by an independent agency. 7 different cases, they recommended we take action. No other president ever used this tool until President Obama. We did it in a case that was brought by the United Steelworkers relative to cheap Chinese tires flooding the market. I won't take you through all of it. We used that authority. Other media beat us to death and said we were just protecting unions, we were going to spark a trade war. We didn't do any of those things. The short answer, we were able to sustain an industry that was losing jobs, and the Cooper Tire Company, who did not support us, just announced they're going to build a new tire manufacturing plant in either Indiana or Cleveland. We can be much smarter about our trade policy so that it sustains our manufacturing. But our manufacturing exports are up. We are selling more of what we make, what we grow, what we innovate in this country around the world. But I want to remind you, one element, this American Jobs Act is just one element of the president's strategy to get us back to work. The longer term strategy, which he harps on all the time, is that we have to out-educate, out-innovate, and out-build the rest of the world. And so we're going to win by continuing to come up with the innovative, creative products, whether it's in the green sector or other, and then sell those to these new consumers in Asia, Africa, India, and the rest of the world.
If I could just add briefly, this administration, the Obama administration, has created the most seamless process for small businesses to get involved in exporting than ever before. We're working with Ambassador Kirk, and we're working with the Department of Commerce, Department of State, all of the federal agencies who are in the exporting space. We're working together under the umbrella of the Trade Promotion Coordinating Council. The SBA chairs the small working group component of that council, and we're working in a true partnership where the SBA is involved in preparing companies that are new to exporting and then handing those companies off to the Department of Commerce to help those companies enter new markets. So again, this is another opportunity where small business creation, it's a good time because exporting is a great business development opportunity for small businesses as well.
And I'd just like to add something to that that may not seem intuitive but is critical. I mean, Ambassador Kirk was talking about out-innovating and out-building the rest of the world. To do that, we have to out-educate the rest of the world. And I talk to any number of CEOs, and what they say to me is, when I think about my workforce, when I think about where I'm going to site my office, where I'm going to put my plant, I think about the communities, the states, the neighborhoods that are going to surround those facilities, and how well educated is the workforce. And we can't afford in this period of climbing out of a recession to let our education system continue to slide backward. And not only in our overall policies that the president has been talking about for the last couple of years have we been focused on education, but embedded in this bill, in the American Jobs Act, are critical elements to do that. We know that about 280,000 education jobs are on the chopping block if we don't do something about it. And the president has included money here, $30 billion, to make sure that we can create and save those kinds of jobs, starting with early educators all the way through K through 12. And similarly, we've got to make sure that we're modernizing our school facilities. You know, we were in Milwaukee, I was in Milwaukee with Secretary Duncan on Friday. The average age of an education facility in Milwaukee is 70 years old. The average age nationally is 40 years old. You can't educate children for the 21st century when they're in facilities that were built for the last century. So this bill includes money to make sure that we're not doing new building, but that we are updating, you know, things like asbestos abatement just to make sure our kids stay healthy, but also we're adding those science and technology labs so that as we're updating our curriculum and we're focusing on science and math and engineering, they can actually go in the lab, they can go into their science classes and other kinds of classes and get those hands-on experiences. So this bill, that's kind of thematic for this bill, it's building on the things that we're talking about, the things that we think are critical to grow our economy overall, not to mention creating and saving jobs.
Can I just add one more note, because Madeline reminded, I think, and Carla, this goes to your point, what else are we doing? The president also appointed a jobs council, some of the biggest CEOs across the board, and one of the things they found, and I think immediately, I mean, they've identified like 200,000 jobs in manufacturing right now that are going unfilled because we don't have the skills in math and sciences to fill that. So they're working with community colleges and others, and undercutting a lot of this, again, for our community particularly, is education. And, you know, and I joke with people all the time that the best thing about my job, I'm in India, Africa, Asia all the time. And when I was a kid growing up, you know, and you all aren't as old as I am, our parents, when they put something before us and we didn't like, would always say, boy, eat your so-and-so children in Africa, China, you fill in the country, are starving. Well, let me tell you now, they may be hungry, but they're reading while they're starving. And I don't go anywhere in the world. I don't go anywhere in Africa, India, Asia. I don't meet a young person who's not polylingual. I mean, these kids speak their native dialect. They all speak English. They speak French. I mean, you get my point. We really have to get back to making sure our kids, first of all, stay in school, but particularly begin to get the language skills that they're going to have to compete in a global economy. And that goes to the core of our manufacturing industry in America is not the old heavy industry. This is a very advanced, you know, innovate. I would challenge any of you to go visit today's steel mill. It looks nothing like what you may think. It is the most high-tech industry you could imagine. So there are jobs there. But to sustain them, in addition to making sure they have the level playing field, we need to make sure we have the skills to take advantage of them.
Ambassador Kirk alluded to some of the tools available to the president to make some decisions. And one of the GRIO readers, Jay Peddles, says, when George Bush was in office, he accomplished some of what he wanted via executive order. What can President Obama do via this method? For instance, could he have avoided some of the challenges the administration is facing by using his executive powers? And if so, why didn't he?
Well, I'll start out by saying we think, and you know, Jason and I see each other in meetings every single day, and we're in meetings with our other colleagues and often with the president, and we think about the range of tools that are available. There are certain things that we can only do legislatively, and in those areas where we're able to move aggressively using administrative authority, using executive order, using presidential memoranda, we've done so. The president alluded to it when he spoke on last Thursday before Congress, things that he has charged this administration with doing to try and advance the cause of job creation, and in fact making jobs easier. I think one of the things going to the work that Marie is doing so expertly is thinking about one-stop shopping for our businesses. I mean, many of you out there are probably business owners. You know, I live with and work with and have friends who are business owners, and trying to navigate what can often be the maze of the federal government can be really difficult to figure out how do you access the resources available to you. We're thinking about how to make that much, much easier and go much more aggressively. You know, one of the things that Secretary Donovan has been actively involved in, and the president also mentioned in his speech with regard to housing and what we can do on our own to try and improve the housing market, try and lift the burden that exists on so many, particularly in the African American and Latino communities, using our executive and administrative authorities. So make no mistake about it, we are thinking every day about what tools we have available to us.
Let me just jump in and follow up Melody's point there, because I think it's incredibly important. I bet a lot of people, even in this audience, don't know that 2 out of every 3 African Americans who bought a home last year used FHA financing. 2 out of 3. That's not legislative. That's an authority we have at HUD that the president has focused on making sure in a time when it's almost impossible for many people who are eminently qualified to be homeowners to get a loan right now. FHA continues to be very focused on serving African-American communities. What the president announced last week is that he is pushing us, using executive authority, to go even further, to make sure, because we have millions of families that are underwater in their mortgages right now, even though we've got the lowest interest rates in the last 50 years, you can get a 30-year fixed rate loan for almost 4%, many people, because they owe more on their homes than their homes are worth, and this is particularly true in African-American communities where the housing crisis hit so hard, you can't take advantage of it. That would be like a more than $2,000 a year tax cut to those families just if they could refinance their mortgages. So he announced that we're going to be working with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and FHA at HUD to make sure that we open up refinancing to those families. And guess what? That's good not only for the homeowners, it's not only good for those communities, it's also good for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac because they get safer loans out of it as well, and that helps the taxpayer. So that's an example of the kind of thing that we're doing that the president has said, use every authority at your means to make sure we're pushing it.
Just to that point, Secretary, what other tangible signs do you see or can the community see of the recovery for, say, a non-believer who's living in an urban area, who's surviving, struggling? What can they see if they're somewhat cynical to say, I don't feel the recovery, I don't see the president's policies helping me enough? What other tangible things can they look for?
Well, look, and the president has said this himself, we're not there yet. We haven't gone far enough. We have today, as we sit here, 40% fewer families are going into foreclosure than they were a year ago. That's progress, but it's still too many families. That's why we have to do more. This neighborhood stabilization effort that I talked about, we now have data that shows that 75% of those communities where we've invested neighborhood stabilization funds have lower vacancy rates than surrounding communities. Two-thirds of those neighborhoods have their house prices have done better than surrounding communities. So there is real evidence, but we're not done. We've got to go farther. We've got to help get to a point, not just where we've stabilized the market in those communities, but where we're actually seeing a real recovery, where we start building wealth again, start building the strength of those neighborhoods. And that's, as the president said last week, he's going to fight. He's not going to stop until we get there. And Congress has to do its job. To get people back to work, Congress has got to get back to work. And that's absolutely critical.
If I could add on to that point, absolutely, we haven't done enough, and that's what all of this work is about. But one other point that I think is an important indicator that we're moving in the right direction, the SBA has responsibility for reporting on the federal government's small business contracting. As many of you probably know, the federal government has a goal of doing 23% of their contracting with small businesses. After a 10-year slide, the last 2 years have been the strongest 2-year growth in the small business contracting area, and the SBA just put out the scorecard for fiscal year 10, and we hit 22.7% small business contracts with the federal government. Now, we won't be satisfied until we're at 23% and beyond, but that 22.7 is the strongest number that we've seen in many years. Valerie Jarrett is chairing a task force tasked by the president to work with the secretaries and deputy secretaries across the federal government to hold them accountable for what they're doing in terms of their small business contracting goals. Bibi Hidalgo is in the room as well, and she's working very closely with the SBA and the other agencies on that front. So I think that's another indicator that no, we're not nearly where we need to be, but we're making progress.
Can I just say, because it drives, sometimes we are so brilliant, we overlook the obvious, but we were talking about manufacturing. And since we got beat up for it, last time I checked, General Motors and Chrysler are alive and well and going. And we sort of take that for granted. That didn't have to be the case were it not singularly for this president taking on Congress. There's no more iconic industry representing the American manufacturing industry, no industry in which we are more heavily invested as employees, as suppliers who feed into the Ford General Motors pipeline. And if you talk to any of the steel manufacturers again, they will tell you, if we had allowed the American automobile industry to die, you wouldn't have a steel industry. So, I mean, I think we assume everybody knows, but not only are General Motors and Chrysler doing well, they're adding capacity. They've paid back much of what we've borrowed, and the same thing on the TARP programs. I just think that bears noting.
And I would add to that, because it goes as a given. Everyone up here from the administration would say we have to do more. But let's not forget the things that I think sometimes we've pocketed. And to Ambassador Kirk's point, we've said, oh, yeah, that's happened, and we've moved on, but they didn't have to be. Healthcare reform, historic. Millions and millions and millions of low-income people and African Americans are already benefiting from the healthcare reform bill that this president fought for and signed into law over almost insurmountable odds. Education reform, the biggest higher education reform bill passed since the GI Bill. We're talking about $68 billion that was reinvested into our higher education system, a lot of it going to minority-serving institutions, HBCUs, and others, community colleges, $40 billion going into Pell Grants. So that's money for low-income students who wouldn't have access to college or community college that now have that kind of access. Billions of dollars literally going into our early Head Start and Head Start program to make sure that low-income toddlers and children who often enter kindergarten with a 60-point deficit have a better start and are able to enter kindergarten with some kind of opportunity. Promise neighborhoods, choice neighborhoods. We're talking about some of the most innovative programs to make sure that we have wraparound holistic services focused on housing and education for low-income people, often in urban areas. Strong cities, strong communities, another innovative program done in partnership with Secretary Donovan and others to make sure that we're looking at our urban centers, those that have a plan but haven't been able to get over the finish line. We're talking about Detroit, we're talking about New Orleans, we're talking about Fresno, we're talking about Chester, Pennsylvania. The list goes on from there to make sure that we're working with local communities based on their plans to get them over the finish lines, expanding earned income tax credit, the child tax credit, in ways that help low-income families. I can go on and on and on. Not enough, but significant, significant investments by this president to make sure that we're serving low-income Americans in urban America in the way that it needs to be served and supported, because we need all hands on deck if this economy is going to succeed.
I have a collective question from our interns at the Urban Daily. The federal work study program is invaluable to all of them. It was to me when I was an undergraduate. But the work that they find themselves doing isn't always relevant to their course of study. And what they're finding now with their internships is that the schools are requiring them to register for a course for the internship in order to get credit, which means essentially they're paying for their internship. Is it possible to expand federal work study programs so that students can be paid to work in corporations that are more relevant to their course of study and would give them more experience once they graduate?
That's an interesting question. I would have to look into that specific issue. I don't know the answer off the top of my head to that. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that the work that we've been doing has been very focused on aligning what the experienced students are getting in school with the kinds of jobs that are going to be available when they finish, whether it's a certification program at a two-year institution or getting that degree from a two-year community college or a four-year institution. What the president said, he said, you know, Melody, this may seem obvious, but when a person finishes getting a certificate or graduating from school, there should be a job on the other end of that experience. Obvious, but not always the case. So we've been working very creatively and in innovative ways to try and put money in the community college system to encourage innovative curriculum. Also thinking about the work that we're doing K-12, college and career ready. A lot of opportunities that we've seen and tried to highlight connecting the K-12 experience to college or community college, to a work experience for students. So that certainly has been our theory and our philosophy. I would have to look into that more specifically.
We have a question from Twitter coming from the audience.
Good afternoon, panelists. Good afternoon, audience members. So we have a question from Twitter. Is the president willing to take a scalpel approach on the jobs bill with the GOP, or is it an all-or-nothing deal?
Why don't I take the first shot at that? President views this as a comprehensive plan, and that's why he's asked Congress to pass it. We just heard in answers to some of the previous questions, the president's been doing his job for the last several years. He's done everything he can administratively. But if you want to prevent hundreds of thousands of teachers from being laid off, there's nothing he can do by himself. Congress needs to pass the American Jobs Act. If you want 35,000 schools modernized, nothing the president can do on his own that would make that happen. Congress needs to pass the American Jobs Act. You want to prevent 1.4 million African Americans from exhausting their unemployment insurance benefits. He can't do that. Congress needs to pass the American Jobs Act. and you look at it and it goes on and it fits together. You have businesses getting more of an incentive to hire. By itself, that's not going to work. It's only going to work if you're doing other things to help create more jobs. It's only going to help if you're giving consumers more purchasing power by giving them tax cuts, if you're helping stabilize the housing economy, which Secretary Donovan was talking about, if you're helping the families most seriously impacted by the recession, which Melody has been talking about. And it all fits together, and that's why the president has really been going out and emphasizing that Congress should be passing the American Jobs Act, which is something he sent to them today.
And we're now going to move into some audience questions. Anyone have some audience questions?
I'm Bernadette Tolson, and I am with the Black Women for Obama for Change. And we have a question. President Obama's wonderful job plan will give companies badly needed payroll tax cuts. However, early responses from businesses reported in the New York Times indicate that companies might take the payroll tax cut benefits, but might not hire the people. We, the Black Women for Obama for Change, respectfully suggest that the White House launch a national jobs pool to ask companies to pledge to hire X number of jobs of people, X number of people for jobs in exchange for the payroll tax benefit. The pledges would be posted on a public website, and everyone can see who is pledging to hire the unemployed and who is not. Now let's take it a little step further. The companies who pledge to hire the people in exchange for the president's payroll tax cut would be rewarded in the media and by positive public responses in their home communities. This would create businesses' goodwill for the companies that pledge to hire.
Well, that's a very interesting idea, and I thank you for it, and we'll certainly take a look at it, because part of what you want to do is make sure that you're putting something into the law and then that people are out there taking advantage of it. One thing that New York Times story you alluded to missed was the answer to the previous question. We view this as a package. If all you did was give companies an incentive to hire, but you weren't helping create jobs in the construction industry, if teachers were still being laid off, if families didn't have enough money to make ends meet, businesses are going to have a hard time hiring. On the other hand, if you're doing all those other steps at the same time that you're giving business an incentive, you can actually get a virtuous cycle going where it's worthwhile. The economy's strengthening, they're hiring people, so the economy is strengthening, and that's exactly what we're trying to kickstart, and really welcome all ideas and suggestions about how to do so. So thank you.
Any questions as well?
Thank you all for taking the time to talk to us today. I'm Erica Williams from Citizen Engagement Lab. And when I talk to folks about the American Jobs Act, the most common two questions I get are, number one, what took so long? And number two, is this big enough and bold enough? So I guess the way I'll phrase that to you is, what is the political and economic analysis right now that makes this the right time for the bill, that we think it will actually pass, and that this will be effective?
Well, the president's been focused on jobs since day one in this administration. The Recovery Act was the largest jobs package ever passed in American history, and it was only the first of many efforts on jobs. It's certainly the case that over the course of the spring, we were very focused on our fiscal situation, and that's in part because we were dealing with a Congress that was, frankly, playing a lot of games and a lot of brinksmanship, and had the United States defaulted on its debt, that would have been terrible for the economy, and they forced that to take far more attention than it should have to deal with it. The president, throughout, we were at the same time that we're working on that, working on all these jobs ideas and waiting for the best possible time to have the maximum impact in announcing them. So we might have been able to do this a month ago in August, but Congress was all gone. They weren't going to be back for a month. By the time they got back, memories would have faded. So at that point, the president decided he wanted to wait, do it the day after that Congress got back, and go straight into the fall, focusing on this day after day. So we're not new to this issue. We've been doing it a lot. There were certainly several months there when we were forced in a situation where we had to put all of our effort into the deficit. And those are both problems, but there's a reason why the president gave an address to the joint session of Congress on jobs, focusing on jobs, and a reason why that's the first piece of legislation he's sending up this fall is the American Jobs Act.
I could add a brief point. Jason mentioned the Recovery Act, but I also don't want folks to forget that the president also signed the most comprehensive law to support the growth of small businesses in our country in over a decade, and that's the Small Business Jobs Act that he just signed at the end of last year. And that new law had over 60 provisions that addressed access to capital, access to counseling and training for small businesses, more support for small businesses in exporting, et cetera. And when in our economy, over half of the folks working today work for a small business, and two out of every three new jobs in the private sector are created by small business. The president knew coming in the door that his administration had to do something bold for small business, and the Small Business Jobs Act was an extraordinary piece of legislation in that regard.
At this point, we don't have enough time for more questions. Valerie Jarrett is going to be coming to close us, but there is one more question. At least one person from all of our outlets has talked about very succinctly and in fact, quite in spirited way, that they believe that this administration in many cases has been too conciliatory to its political opposition. And in many cases, given a level of respect that has not been returned. Do you all in any way, shape, or form believe that this sentiment has any validity? And moving forward, will we begin to see any variation in the administration's approach to its opposition?
Well, let's just remember, when Melody Barnes went through that list of what this president has done, there isn't a president in history that's had a longer list of accomplishments in 2.5 years. So I will tell you, this president fights when he needs to fight. When his back was up against the wall and he was the last person believing that the health care bill was going to get passed, he fought and he got it passed. When he's needed to work hand in hand and put out an olive branch to get things done, he's done that. Nobody expected him to get a bill at the end of the lame duck session that would put millions of people back to work. He got it. And I will tell you, the president that you saw last week in a fighting spirit, fed up with Congress not acting, and he's going to stand up and fight to put people back to work. So to me, this is a president who does what he needs to do to get the job done. And every step along the way, I know Valerie likes to say, nobody had ever made money betting against Barack Obama. And I will tell you that this is a president who's going to keep fighting, but his eyes are on the prize. He is focused on getting things done. Not about the theatrics, not about the politics, but on getting things done.
Yeah, and I think it's instructive to remind people, at least for those of us that have been involved with this president since this whole notion of him occupying this office was a dream. And I just enjoyed the fact that every step of the campaign, they've always been asked these questions about Barack Obama. Is he tough enough? But I remind people, we're all who we are. And the same president you saw last week was the same president. If you remember, before we took office and we had the first news of the financial crisis and one of the other candidates suspended his campaign and rolled back to Washington, was going to fix everything, and everybody kept saying, where's Barack Obama? Until you found out that he had convened the best and brightest minds to make sense of what was going and come up with an intelligent response. And that's his MO. And he's done it every step of the way. He's going to continue to do it. Believe me, he feels what you feel. We can all see things for what they are. But he is president because he is brilliant. He is calm. He is he's very collective in his thought. And as my mother would say, you're never going to be in a bad world when you choose to be more gracious to someone else than they can be disrespectful to you. And for those of us who grew up in the South, I didn't learn that lesson as well as President Obama, by the way. But at least my mother used to always tell me, you got a choice every day. Do you want to be meaner to them? Your goal ought to be nicer to them than trying to be as mean as they are to you. And I would tell you at the end of the day, I think we're going to do just fine.
And Ron, Ambassador Kirk, just want to interrupt you for a second. I know all of us have thoroughly enjoyed interacting with you and you watching this, but I want to introduce someone now who I think is the best person to talk about these issues, the President of the United States, President Barack Obama.
Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, hello. Thank you, everybody. Everybody have a seat. Thank you so much. I just said Ron's quoting his mama again. For those of you who've met his mama, I will tell you that she is wiser and funnier than he is. I know that we're spending some time today talking through a whole bunch of issues, and I appreciate everybody coming here. I appreciate those who are participating, as well as my members of my cabinet. Everybody in this room and all of your readers care about getting folks back to work and to strengthen the economy. And so today I held up the bill, the American Jobs Act, that is designed to do just that. And I'm calling on Democrats and Republicans to come together in Congress and pass it right away. I know you've already heard some details, but I just want to give you a few highlights. First, this will provide tax cuts for small businesses, not big corporations, to help them hire more folks and to grow their businesses. It provides an additional tax cut for everybody who hires somebody new or provides somebody a raise. So this is going to help over 100,000 African-American-owned small businesses. Next, it puts people back to work, including 280,000 teachers laid off by state budget cuts, first responders, veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, construction workers that can rebuild our crumbling roads and bridges and schools. 35,000 public schools can be rebuilt according to this plan. And these projects will be chosen based on impact and need, not based on earmarks or politics. It expands job opportunities for hundreds of thousands of low-income youth and adults through a Pathways Back to Work fund that supports summer and year-round jobs for youth, innovative new job training programs to connect low-income workers to jobs more quickly, and successful programs to encourage employers to bring on disadvantaged workers. Number three, it helps out-of-work Americans, including the 1.4 African-American folks and their families who are out of work, by extending unemployment benefits to help support them and their families while they're looking for work. And it also reforms the training programs that are available so that they can build real skills and connect to jobs. And that will particularly help the long-term unemployed. It bans employers from discriminating against the unemployed when hiring. And it provides a new tax credit to employers hiring workers who've been out of the job for over 6 months. Number four, it puts money in your pocket, in the pockets of working and middle-class Americans, by cutting the payroll tax in half, including 20 million African-American workers who would save, for an average family, $1,500 a year. We take executive action to remove the barriers that exist in the current federal refinancing program to help Americans refinance their mortgage at historically low rates. All that helps them stay in their homes and puts more money in their pockets. Finally, this plan will not add to the deficit. It's fully paid through a balanced approach that says we've got to raise more revenues from folks who can afford it. It also makes some modifications to programs so that we can preserve them over the long term, and closing tax loopholes. And it is absolutely essential for everybody to understand that we can do all the things I talk about in this bill without adding to our deficit, without adding to our debt. Now, all of you are experts on online stuff, so I won't speak to how important it is that events like this get information out. One of the things that I'm always enjoy because of this online community is that it's a two-way conversation. So some of you may have ideas about how we should get the word out, how we should frame these issues, how we should mobilize our communities in order to get it passed. I'm going to want to hear from you. To our guests from Interactive One, your ability to facilitate this sort of conversation between experts and communities in need is something that we're very interested in. So I hope that we can continue to get more people informed and keep them active in their communities and in their government. So with that, I understand, Melody, that I have time for at least one question.
Terrific.
Is it going to be somebody out here?
I'll turn to Jeff.
Yes, I definitely think it should be. If we can have someone, where is our mic? Okay, yeah, if we have a question from the audience, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Michael Tabb from Atlanta, Georgia. I just had
Sorry about your Falcons yesterday.
Let's keep on a positive
note. I'm
sorry,
who were they playing again?
Let's keep on a positive note.
Was that the Chicago Bears that he was playing?
We'll see you again in the playoffs. I had one question. I've read through the act, and I think it's an outstanding document that puts up forth a lot of new things, things that have been done in the past that should get passed.
Right.
But one thing that I did not see, and I don't quite know how it would affect entrepreneurs, is any type of investment for venture capital, private equity firms. I think it makes an assumption that businesses aren't hiring people because there's a financial incentive that they're not getting, and that if they give them a financial incentive, that they'll hire. And I think lots of businesses are very pleased not to be hiring. They like the margins. They like the increased productivity of the people they have. So what about new business, new opportunity through private equity, venture capital? Some of the things that are being done by the SBA through the CDFIs and things like that, are they going to be tied back to this so that there's going to be an investment?
Well, look, I think this is a great question. Not everything that we're doing to promote jobs and economic growth are contained in the bill, because some things we are going to try to do administratively as opposed to trying to get it through Congress. So, but if you listen to the speech on Thursday, I specifically addressed this issue and said that we're working with the Jobs Council that I set up, as well as all the agencies, to figure out how can we remove some of the barriers to startup companies capitalizing themselves. You know, how can we work with the SBA and others to make sure that somebody who's got a good idea is able to raise money and implement? And so we're going to have a whole series of things that we're doing to help small businesses precisely in the ways that you're talking about. We just don't think that we need necessarily new authority from Congress in order to get that done. So understand, this jobs bill is not exhaustive. There are a whole range of things that we're going to be doing. What this describes is what we need Congress to do in order for us to be effective. But there's some things we can do administratively. For example, the federal government is a major purchaser. You know, we have taken a lot of steps over the last couple of years, and we're going to continue to take more steps so that small businesses have the ability to access contracts with the federal government. Right now, it's very difficult to do because typically the size of these contracts are so big, they're all bundled and packaged, and it gives a huge advantage to somebody who can come in and they've got the bonding capacity and all the ability to fill out every form and meet every federal requirement. You know, A, we want to give technical assistance to folks so that they can have access. Number two, can we break up some of these contracts so that they're smaller, so that small businesses can apply? And number three, something that I may have mentioned in this, I think I mentioned in the speech on Thursday, can we speed up payments to federal vendors? You know, if you're Lockheed Martin, you know, you're getting paid over the only after 30 days is no big deal. You know, if you're a small business who's you know, contracting with HUD, you know, getting paid in 15 days instead of 30 days might make all the difference in the world in terms of you being able to grow your business more rapidly. So we're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff that's not in the bill. But the bill has to pass in order for us to achieve the kinds of scale that are necessary to start bringing our unemployment rate down in a significant way. That was such a good question. I'll take one more.
President Obama, we have a question from one of our Twitter users. Currently, 10% of U.S. workers are employed by nonprofits. What in your jobs bill is going to spur more nonprofit job growth?
Well, first of all, the biggest loss that we've seen in employment over the last 2.5 years has been in state and local government. And so the reason we emphasize teachers, first responders in particular, is because that's where the job losses have been most prominent. We've actually created jobs in the private sector to the tune of about 2 million over the last 17, 18 months. But they've been offset by folks being laid off, teachers, first responders at state and local governments that are really feeling pinched. In the non-for-profit sector, obviously, things have been tighter during the course of this recession. That means their fundraising has suffered, and in some cases, they've had to lay off workers as well. I think our goal here is to make sure that that this administration continues to support smart non-for-profits that are partnering with the private sector, but also government, in order to achieve the kinds of goals that we've set for ourselves as a country. So, for example, when we have said that we want to do more on early childhood education, a lot of that's not government. If we're budgeting for that, that is giving non-for-profit organizations the capacity then to be providers in that space. When we talk about the healthcare front, we were able to preserve a big investment in community health centers. A lot of those are non-for-profits. So our budget has been reflective of and recognizing that non-for-profits are a critical component of delivering important services, building capacity in our communities all across the country. One thing that is very specific in this jobs plan, for example, is neighborhood stabilization. I don't know if Sean has talked about this. There are a whole bunch of communities all across the country, and some of the communities where you guys come from, if you're from Cleveland or Detroit or other places, where you got entire neighborhoods full of foreclosed homes. What can we do to turn that around? Can we rehab some of those buildings to make them rental properties? In some cases, do you just clear those buildings out and create open spaces and parks and recreation facilities for kids? And so in this plan is a neighborhood stabilization expansion, and a lot of that work would end up being carried out by non-for-profits as opposed to directly by the government. All right? Okay, everybody, so I want you guys to pump this up. We are in a critical juncture here. I've been fighting for 2.5 years to get through this economic storm. And we have stabilized, but we've stabilized at an unemployment rate that is too high, and too many people are still hurting. For us to take that next step requires us to do more. And this Jobs Act can deliver. There's going to be enormous resistance. And right now, our politics makes it tougher to get things done here in Washington unless the voices of the American people are heard. So I need people to be out there promoting this and pushing this and making sure that everybody understands the details of what this would mean. So that one of two things happen. Either Congress gets it done, or if Congress doesn't get it done, people know exactly what's holding it up. And we're able to continue to apply pressure so that we can actually do what's right for the country. All right? Thank you, everybody. See you.
Well, that was a nice surprise, wasn't it?
Yes.
When the president heard you were here, he said, another important audience for me to go and deliver my message to, because as he said, he's going to take his message all across the country. And you all represent such a huge part of our country that needs to hear this message and hear it today. So we want to thank you again for coming today. We want to thank Interactive One for creating and working with us on this forum. As the president said, we can't do this without you. We want your help. We want your engagement. We want your terrific questions. We want your suggestions. Again, as he said, it's so important that we get this act passed. But this is the beginning. We have to keep going each and every day, and we're always looking for new and fresh and exciting ideas. And we encourage you to not just interact with us here when we have a big audience, but to feel welcome to contact us individually whenever you have a great idea, whenever you have a great question. And then we ask you to do one thing, and that is communicate back out to your networks, because that's how America should work. It should be an interaction, it should be an engagement, and we are here to serve you. And so help us help you. Thank you very much, everybody.